Welcome to another episode of Crossing Soccer Borders, a podcast focused on the growth of CONCACAF soccer and part of the DynamoTheory.com podcast network. I am Rudy.
And I am Rodrigo.
And tonight we have plenty of soccer to talk about. Rodrigo, how you been? How was your weekend?
I've been pretty good. Went down to Houston for the weekend. We had a quinceañera to go to Saturday night and then just came back Sunday afternoon. Had to come back and catch the CONCACAF final, Gold Cup final. But yeah, it's busy weekend traveling, I guess mostly on the road, but it was good. What about yourself?
Not too bad, man. Honestly, I was pretty busy on Friday. I took the day off to do a few errands and stuff, but I felt like I was running all over the city. And then Saturday, pretty much rested, which was great. And then Dynamo played against Real Salt Lake, and I was like, man, it's literally just gonna be pretty much me going. So, and I really didn't feel like it for some reason, which I always look forward to the games, but I was like, I don't know if it was because it was hot or whatever, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because it was a 0-0 tie against Real Salt Lake, you know, the Houston Dynamo doing their thing. But and then Sunday I pretty much just went to church and then met up with a friend in downtown, and that was pretty much it, man. And like you said, obviously watched the Gold Cup, of course, and that's what we're gonna talk about today. We're gonna break down the Gold Cup final, give our perspective of what we saw, and definitely I feel like, you know, I hope a lot of the people listening don't think we're completely like against the U.S. national team, because I don't think we are. We just do mention the fact that we are both from Mexico, and when the two play each other, we're always going to rep for Mexico. But Rodrigo, you want to start talking about the Gold Cup, and we can start breaking it down wherever you want to start, man.
Man, I thought we were here to praise the U.S. and bash Mexico. That's what I thought we were going to talk about.
Honestly, I think that's exactly what's going to end up happening. So I guess, you know what? I'll go ahead and start. I'll go start with, you know, in the very beginning, we talked about how this was the U.S., you know, B team, C team, D team, whatever you want to call it. And in the very beginning of the tournament, the team seemed that way, right? They were just not necessarily clicking at all. So they were playing, okay. There were definitely plenty of errors, and they were just, you know, beating teams 1-0. Obviously, there was that one big scoring match against Martinique, if I'm not mistaken. But apart from that, it was one of those, you know, the team was barely getting into rhythm. I think we all know that the players that were picked, even though they play mostly in the MLS, they're all very talented players. There's a few little sparkling players from Europe, like, forgot his first name, but is it Hoppy from Schalke? Dude kind of showed up, young guy that it seems a lot of people see that Dempsey vibe to him. So it was great to see them, you know, come along and win this tournament. I mean, ourselves, it's not that we didn't give them credit. We always knew that the U.S.-Mexico was probably going to be the final. The thing here was, could this team beat Mexico? And this Mexico team, it was, I mean, we can say it. I mean, it was like 90% what it tends to be, right? There's maybe a few players. I think key players being your goalie, you're not having Ochoa playing, and obviously not having a true striker. At least, you know, someone with a little bit more of that international playing-wise, unlike, you know, Funes Mori. Funes Mori was good. He started out slow himself, then picked it up, and then just kind of died, right? Like, he was just not on it, especially in the final, and we saw that, and there was really no answer for that. And I guess we can start breaking up the final, man. Rodrigo, in your perspective, how did the U.S. manage to, you know, I mean, we know, like, what it took to win this match, obviously, but what do you think what helped the U.S. excel and beat this Mexican team?
All right. First of all, I'm going to start off by saying something I don't think you mentioned, but congrats to the U.S. on winning the Gold Cup, most importantly. But yeah, I mean, their success, especially against Mexico, was just playing solid defense. I think as far as their communication, breaking down, you know, the Mexican offense. I think that they did a very good job of that. They did a very good job at pressing when they needed to. Obviously trying to find like a counter or something like that, trying to get the ball away. And then there was times that they just successfully did that and were just kind of hammering Mexico in the back. Once they were able to get the pressure out of their side, you know, we saw it for a good 10, 15 minutes, especially towards the end of the game or the end of the regulation time. They were just going at Mexico. You know, that it kind of seemed like, okay, you know, the U.S. is going to score here. And then Mexico, you know, just kind of came back on and started to do their own thing and, you know, keeping more possession, controlling the game more, creating obviously more opportunities. It was just a back and forth game, a really good game to watch. You know, this is kind of like what we talked about before. Like, these are the games that we want to watch. Both, you know, teams going at it, basically looking for that knockout punch, especially when it's like, you know, a tough match and it's anybody's game at that point. But honestly, the U.S. played well. You know, we'll get more in depth with that. But what it reminded me for them the whole tournament was the Spain's World Cup. I guess 2010 World Cup, when they lifted the trophy. It was really just, you know, not poor performances, but they did just enough to win. And I think this is exactly what this U.S. team did to, in this tournament. You know, they barely got that 1-0 win for the most part, almost every single game. They had that, you know, 6-1 against Martinique, but other than that, everything was really close. And I mean, as far as Mexico, I think they kind of had the same path by minimal margin as well. But I think what really affected this squad mostly, other than the key players you mentioned that they missed, was Lozano. You know, Chucky is a big part of this team, or for what this Gold Cup represented. Like, he was one of the key players to be in this tournament. I think they expected that, especially taking other young players to the Olympics. I think they kind of wanted him just for this one. And unfortunately, you know, first game in, 15 minutes into the first game, he's basically out for 4 weeks or so. So that was probably the biggest impact Mexico had early on.
Yeah, and I think you have players in the U.S. that honestly picked it up, right? Like a Kellen Acosta that he, you know, for a while he was getting a bunch of crap and he was playing. I mean, it's kind of weird because I see it at him as like a box-to-box number eight, even though he was playing a more central kind of defensive midfielder. But the dude was literally all over the pitch, creating for the U.S. as well as disrupting what Mexico was doing. And, you know, again, the team, I feel like there's some players that, like Paul Arriola, I don't understand. You know, he came in, and since he came in, you know, kind of midway through the tournament and took over as the captain above Leggett, the guy wasn't doing much, right? Like, he was definitely not on it. He was very slow, not necessarily participating on building an attack. So whenever he was subbed, that's when everything changed for the U.S. I think, like, it opened up chances for them to score, of course, with Busio coming in, Sam Bynes coming in, a lot of young, talented players that are doing very well in the MLS, right? I think they have a group that was in this tournament that a lot of them could easily get picked up by like a European team. I'm not saying they're gonna go to like a, you know, a Barcelona or a Real Madrid, because, you know, that's not the way it tends to be. That's how Mexico wants to be, right? I know Mexican players and Mexican owners of this Mexican teams, all they want to do is sell their stars for like a bunch of money to like big European teams that don't get any playing time at the end of the day. Instead of seeing, you know, young guys from the U.S. like a Reggie Cannon going to like a Boavista and playing, you know, day in and day out, and getting that opportunity to be able to play. The only thing that I want to, before I let you talk a little bit more, I just do want to mention the fact that seeing all of your three strikers in the Mexican side, you know, you had Tecatito Corona, Rogelio Funes Mori, El Mellizo, and Orbelín Pineda all come out. That says a lot from the U.S. because they shut down that attacking, you know, to an extent, and Mexico had no answer for it. I mean, you know, they put in a Rodolfo Pizarro, which right now he's not at his best level, and an Alan Pulido that hadn't played, two guys that hadn't really played, and, you know, they were expecting for them to do something, and that was just never going to be the answer. Rodrigo, what else do you want to mention? I do have something else I want to mention, but keep going, man.
Yeah, like we mentioned with the U.S., or, and as he said, with like Reggie Cannon, there's only a handful. This win for the U.S. is a, you know, positive and a, I guess, negative for this team, exactly, just because, you know, they did what they needed to do, which was win the tournament, as, you know, the critics always gave them, I guess, a hassle on, you know, this is a C team, this is a B team, whatever it is. They did it, you know, they went out there, they won the tournament, but it just sucks that we know that a handful of players are only going to be picked for the main squad. You know, you have Reggie Cannon, which obviously would be one of them. You have Miles Robinson, which, you know, he had the game winner and he's been playing really well, had another goal earlier as well. You know, I think he only been with the national team for 9 games so far and already scored 3 goals. Looks pretty solid as a player, especially in this Gold Cup. You know, you have Busio, which that's for me, that he has to be part of this next squad. And then you have Christian Roldan, which, you know, it's another big U.S. player, or future player, I would say, that I can see him being part of the next squad as a key piece, you know, once we get, you know, the Pulisic, the Reina, Sergio Des, everybody else back on this squad. Those players must remain there. And I guess on the negative side of things, you know, the players that are not going to get to come back, I see it really hard for Sebastian Leggett to, you know, be part of the World Cup team. But I also kind of see, like, it's a good thing for him of winning this Gold Cup. You know, I think that's a big thing that he was missing, at least for his career and personal, I guess, trophies. But that's actually, you know, I like that. You know, there's players that are, this is going to be their most memorable probably appearance with the U.S. national team. And as far as the Mexican side goes, you know, for the most part, I think all of these players are going to be in some way, some form, in and out of the Mexico squads through qualifiers, and possibly, I want to say maybe 80% of the squad will end up making it to a World Cup squad.
Yeah, and I think one of the players that you didn't mention was the goalie, Matt Turner. I mean, the dude had been playing lights out with New England, and a lot of people were saying, you know, a couple years back when he was probably named one of the top players in the league, how he was an older, you know, obviously he's 27, I think, you know, he was kind of like a late starter or late known player. But the guy, I mean, he's a great shot blocker, PK blocker. I mean, the guy is very solid. And like you said, he may be one other guy that may get bumped out of, like, you know, the qualifiers and why not, when you have players like Zach Steffen or Ethan Harbaugh playing and stuff like that. So that's in the U.S. perspective. And one thing that I wanted to mention that you said, you know, how, like, the media, or there was a lot of criticism and harsh criticism in my perspective was against the Mexican player, Carlos Salcedo. I feel like, you know, not necessarily in this final, and obviously he didn't start. So one big thing here in the Gold Cup final, you know, you had Hector Moreno and Nestor Araujo playing as the, you know, the center backs. And then Hector Moreno gets hurt. They put in Salcedo, and then Salcedo gets hurt. And then they put in, what's his name? Tubo? Is it Tiba? I always forget that. I'm trying to remember the nickname.
Tiba.
Tiba. Tiba, yeah, Tiba Sepúlveda. And so when they put in Sepúlveda, you know, you already have 3 different combinations of center backs. That's never ideal. I mean, you know, you never ever, I mean, your 2 center backs are super important pieces. You need the chemistry for them to play. And for them to only concede 1 goal, that says a lot about that, you know, because that is very challenging to come in and have that happen. But going back to Salcedo, you know, again, dude, it seems like nowadays, you know, especially watching on the Spanish side television, hearing like all the commentators just like bash out on one player and kind of picking one player apart. And we all know kind of how Carlos Salcedo can be. He's like a hot-headed guy. He can be very explosive, and I think it's easy to pick on players like that because their character shows that they may just, you know, kind of do whatever the hell they want to do. And that showed, like, we talked before, like, we started recording, the fact that when he was coming in as a sub, he was taking his sweet time. I mean, Hector Moreno was, like, waiting at the line, and you had Salcedo, like, literally taking 5 minutes trying to put his shin guards on, and the coaches are yelling at him. But before that, in the semifinal, you know, he made an error. I don't know if you got to see that match, but he made an error that, like, he let the ball bounce, basically, you know, like, kind of. It was early in the first half, I believe. He made like an error of like letting the ball bounce and kind of made, you know, it could have been a goal scoring opportunity, but at the end of the day, it wasn't. And the commentators and the media were just like, you know, for 10, 20 minutes, all they would talk about was how Salcedo, oh my God, how did he let that happen? Oh my God, like, that's a big error. Nobody scored. You know what I mean? Like,
At the same time, I mean, in this U.S. game, he did the exact same thing. They played it to him. He tried to, you know, dribble in the back, ended up losing the ball. Literally, this was, I think, the 80-something minute, I want to say. If not, it was right before he ended up getting subbed out. So it had to be still in the first, the regulation time. But yeah, he lost the ball. And then I think they ended up getting a shot, but Araujo ended up just heading it out. You know, and that's basically kind of, you can't commit those kind of errors. And
no, for
you
sure.
Know, it wasn't just one game. It's, you know, it's multiple errors. And it's not like he's playing, I wouldn't say with confidence, but he just doesn't care. Like, okay, if I mess up and we get scored on, you know, we'll try to score again. But that could just be it.
No, and I agree on what you're saying, because again, my point is the fact that, you know, especially like a player like that, you know, like, I mean, being in Houston, we had like a Romel Quioto, right? When fans started getting, you know, just, you know, obviously this guy's a super talented player. I mean, Mino Salcedo's a super talented player, you know. I got into playing in big clubs and playing in MLS and played in Europe and why not. So overall, this guy's a talented player. But when, you know, the media and the fans are just, you know, turning on him, you know, your mentality changes, right? Like, you're not focused. Like you said, you're going to have this careless attitude. But at the end of the day, a lot of those errors that he was committing, they weren't being punished. That's what I was trying to say. You know, like, there's a difference if you're, you know, committing these errors and you're getting scored on, you know, every time you do that. But that wasn't the case. And to me, it's like, why do you keep, why does the media, why do the fans keep, like, exploiting, you know, the aspect of like, oh my God, this guy's committing errors. But it's like, okay, nothing happened. You know, like, it was in the semifinal. Yes, the one of the errors that he scored one of the goals, I believe, didn't he? No, okay. But for some reason, I thought that he had scored, and then we got scored on. But I may have it wrong. But you know, obviously he missed a PK in the semifinals. You know, I think it's just one of those players. You know, people are already saying that he shouldn't be called up to the team anymore. And I just don't see it, like, justify that he shouldn't be called up, if that makes sense. And I think that's the issue that I have with the criticism of, like, the everybody just turning on one player. Same thing with, like, Chicharito. Not everybody wants Chicharito to be called up. When, for the longest time, people kept hating on him. Like, why is he getting called up? He's not playing in Europe. You know, why is he doesn't have any action? Why is he getting called up? So it's just people just want to make, you know, some kind of case of when you're good and when you're bad.
I think they're just trying to assign blame to one single player, which obviously, you know, this is just a team sport. But at the same time, I don't think it's just the football playing aspect of it. I think it just has to be with leadership and other things, you know. Because at his age, you would want to see somebody more as a captain. And this guy is literally starting fights on the field. And you don't want that as a, you know, no captain ever starts a fight on purpose. If anything, you're doing the opposite. You're trying to pull your players away. And when things got heated and, you know, the semifinal against Canada and a little bit in the U.S., he's the first one to almost basically start throwing punches. And you don't want that. And that's what makes it look bad. And then his decision making, you know, he decided to take the penalty against Canada, thought he was the right man to do it. And, you know, it gets saved. you know, and then you have this little errors, as you mentioned, and it's just kind of like, you know, there's nothing positive coming out of it. So it's just one of those things that I don't see that he wouldn't get called up again. But man, when you look at our team, and I guess I can divvy it a little bit, I guess we're talking more now aspects in the US-Mexico squads, but the Olympic squad, you know, you have Cesar Montes, which, you know, he's what, 6'3", young defender, he's quick, you know, he showed pretty solid. You know, we have up and coming defenders, Sepulveda as well. I like him. I'm a little bit shorter than what you like for a center back. I think he's barely 5'11", maybe 6 feet. But he's solid, you know. He's a solid defensive player. And I like his attitude. He reminds me of, like, N'Golo Kante kind of style and, like, demeanor and the way he plays and the way he, I guess, approaches just situational things. But, you know, the Olympic squad obviously took basically all the forwards. Gold Cup squad was missing is what the Olympic squad had. You know, they had players that are good dribblers. You know, they can be creative in the midfield. They're quick. You had, you know, good offensive players as well. You know, good wings. Basically, they took that. So, yeah, I mean, this Gold Cup, you know, not to make excuses, but this Gold Cup team, it's a decent squad, obviously, to compete. We obviously expected more. But at the same time, there's still a lot this Mexico team has to offer. Especially looking back, and you know, you already lost two finals against the U.S. Right now, I'm sure more than anything, more Mexicans are basically, you know, shedding on the team. Basically, you know, you're just trying to find anything to blame this team, which I honestly don't think we have a bad squad. I don't think the U.S. is gonna have a bad squad. Like, I'm actually excited for the next World Cup, and more than anything, the 2026 World Cup. You know, I think that's really going to show both teams at their full potential level as they're growing. And hopefully we can see, you know, Canada and Honduras and everybody else also pick up their level. But I think we're going to see something special, I think, in the next few years with these two squads. And, you know, the passion of the rivalry is just going to keep building up.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to add, that you hit it on the dot when it comes to, you know, Carlos Salcedo. You know, the guy is not a teenager, right? I mean, he's been playing for a while. He's like 28, 29. And when you see a player like Bucio in the U.S., so cool, calm, collected, you know, he has like that leadership mentality and style of kind of like showing with actions. And I think, to be honest, that was pretty much all of their squad. And you know, sometimes you need that. I mean, you may not be like the most talented player, but if you have that composure and you are consistent, you're always going to win. I think at the end of the day, it's easier. And I think all these guys that the U.S. fielded literally have about the same type of, you know, characteristics when it comes to that. You know, I don't think necessarily, again, Matthew Hoppe was probably Hoppe, they kept pronouncing it so different every time I heard it, but he was probably one of the ones that was probably the cockiest, you know what I mean? Like him and maybe Paul Arriola, but everybody else was so focused on getting this, you know, done, beating Mexico in two straight finals, right? I mean, it's a big deal. Mexico doesn't lose two straight finals ever within a month, you know, playing against CONCACAF rivals. I mean, we know that, you know, Gold Cups tend to go like one U.S., one Mexico, one U.S., one Mexico. Like, it's always flip-flopping, and the Mexico always makes the case as being los grandes de CONCACAF in quotation marks. But from the Mexican side, I take people like Edson Alvarez. I think the guy has cemented his role playing, you know, that defensive midfield position. I feel like Néstor Araujo is probably still and the talks of being, you know, starter for the team. Obviously, Tecatito. And from there, I mean, even Aurelien Pineda was a very good, a key player for the team. You know, he started again kind of slow as well, but I think he was consistent enough. And then you have players like HH, you know, Hector Herrera, that at times he just looks so too relaxed and losing the ball, like when he shouldn't be losing the ball. You know, you're a very good player. You know, you play in Atletico Madrid, you just won La Liga, and I feel that like kind of like the attitude of like, not necessarily I'm better than you per se, but you know, whenever you already did something big, you are definitely more relaxed. And not necessarily the final, but even in the semifinal, he just kind of looked like he was too relaxed. And then players like Jesús Gallardo and Chaka Rodríguez, that tend to be really good for the Mexican, they weren't just there. You know, it wasn't their tournament, and that's okay. It happens, right? Like, there's some people that are on some games and some are not. And out of both of those, I think Gallardo was the one that kind of seemed like to suffer more. He was definitely not on point. He used to always, you know, be on that sideline with his defending and attacking. And we definitely lacked that. And of course, not having the forwards to finish it off. Man, Rodrigo, I think we've talked a lot about the Gold Cup. Man, finish your thoughts on this Gold Cup, or did Mexico or the U.S., before we change the subject, man.
I don't really have much to say. I mean, I think we covered, or, you know, I had to say what I had to say. I'm excited for both squads moving forward. Qualifiers are going to be, you know, a heck of a matches between these two squads, and also the other games they have coming up, you know, with their respective CONCACAF teams. And Mexico obviously will start off playing with no fans due to the whole FIFA ban because of the homophobic chant, which honestly at this point, and that's the only thing I would say about, I guess, my closing thoughts, is we heard it throughout the Gold Cup, and if anything's going to keep Mexico from reaching a World Cup, it's going to be that. You can't have fans keep doing this and knowing that FIFA's after Mexico and the Mexican fans. Yes, you can do what they're doing now, which is going to be, you know, closed doors games. But when you get to a World Cup, and you know how Mexicans like to travel, I don't think those Mexicans would do that, especially traveling to a World Cup. But if they do, you know, they can close the doors. You know, they can play, you know, with no fans at those games, because you're losing a lot of money. So it just makes sense that Mexico will be disqualified before even going over there. So yeah, I honestly just think that needs to stop. But other than that, I think we're going to see two great squads coming together. I think Tata Martino's here to stay as of now. If anybody were to step up, I think it's time to look for, man, I really like Piojo. I think he did a great job back then. I think he knows the players. He has that passion built in him, and that's what the players need. I think this is what this Mexican squad needed the most, was just some kind of passion for the game. Like you said, everybody looked, you know, like just there because they had to be there. Team chemistry didn't look as great. They came together more, I guess, after, you know, Jonathan Dos Santos and Giovanni's dad passed away. They seem a little bit more, you know, like, hey, we're here with you, and through this tough time. But other than that, before that, they just did not seem as like, you know, there was no unity between them, and that kind of, you know, changed them. And unfortunately, you know, they ended up losing the final. But there's a lot to, you know, if this is going to be the main core plus the Olympic key players or the, you know, miss this Gold Cup, I think we're gonna have a good squad.
Yeah, and just to touch real quick, obviously the Olympics, they ended up losing the semifinal, so they'll be Mexico would be playing to win a bronze medal, which is a little disappointing, but that they played a pretty good Brazil team that knocked them out in PKs. But yes, a lot of the players are probably and most likely going to be part of the qualification stages, especially the players like the guy that plays for America. What was his name? Cordoba, whatever. The dude is very good, and he definitely showed up this tournament. But with that, I mean, that's pretty much all our episode. I do want to touch the fact that we have CONCACAF Champions League coming up next week, and we'll most likely hit on them before they start. As well as, Rodrigo, what did you mention was Leagues Cup? The 2021 Leagues Cup is also happening. And I will let you run down real quick. So August 10th, you have Seattle Sounders against Tigres. And then you also have Sporting KC playing León. August 11th, you have New York FC playing against Pumas UNAM. And then August 12th, which is my wife's birthday, and I probably won't be able to watch it, but Orlando City playing against Santos Laguna. So those are pretty good matches to watch. Obviously, this tournament started in 2019, and it was eventually canceled last year. Nobody played. And then the Champions League, we have two great semifinals going to happen. as well. August 11, you have Monterrey playing Cruz Azul at 9 p.m. And then Club America playing the lonely MLS team, which is Philadelphia Union, August 12 at 9 p.m. as well. Rodrigo, with that being said, man, I guess I can close those out since you panicked last week, but it's all good. So, yeah, guys, just make sure to, you know, keep liking, subscribing, follow us on our social media, and keep crossing soccer borders.